What's up, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of Shooting the Breeze. I'm your host, Max Hooper, and the purpose of this podcast is for me to share my unique basketball experiences and perspectives while sharing those of my guests. For those of you who aren't aware, my entire senior year at Oakland University, I did not attempt one two-point field goal, and I took a whole lot of threes, 257 of them, as a matter of fact. I've always prided myself in being a great shooter, and that is what continues to propel my basketball career. So, yep, you guessed it. On this show, we'll be talking shooting. Today, I have a very special guest, a former teammate of mine and great friend, Sharon Dorsey Walker. Sharon is currently a senior at Oakland University. Today, Sharon and I will talk about the shooter's mentality, the challenges surrounding transferring schools and joining a new team, his current season, his relationship with Coach Greg Campy, and many other things. Sharon, without any further ado, welcome to Shooting the Breeze. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Thanks for having me on your show, bro. You know, it's a pleasure.
Absolutely. You know, we just want to, you know, some people who might be first-time listeners to the show, you know, this is just a chance to talk basketball, you know what I mean? Something that I'm passionate about and something that all the guests I'll end up having on here are very passionate about, basketball, you know. And I'm a shooter, you know what I mean? So we're going to talk about shooting, and we're just going to talk about a lot of people's different experiences in the game and just anything basketball related. So let's just, the way I'm going to start it off is we're going to dive right into some shooting discussion. So just give me some of your thoughts on shooting the ball. If you're teaching a young player, or maybe you're having an off game shooting the ball, give me three keys about shooting the ball that you think are the most important things when you're shooting the ball.
If I'm having an off game, you know, and I'm not shooting the ball well, you know, I might come out at halftime, you know, give me some touch shots in, you know, some form shots, making sure my elbow's straight, you know, making sure my, you know, I'm extending the ball well and I got good rotation on the ball. And that's some things that I might, you know, focus on, you know, at halftime if I'm having a bad shooting game.
Sure. So talk about, so, you know, you mentioned a few, you know, get your elbow square, make sure you know, your rotation is on point. Talk about the mental side of shooting. Talk about your shooting mentality, you know what I mean, as being a knockdown shooter. What do you think some of the elements that you need?
Well, first of all, you got to be confident in yourself. You know, I already know you're a confident person, Max. You know, I don't think I ever met nobody more confident than you. You know, you thought every shot was going in, even if you missed, you know, 10 shots. So, you know, you got to have that short-term memory. If you miss your last shot, your last five, the next one going in, you got to believe in yourself, believe you're the best shooter on the floor when you step in the gym. So that's the mental part, I think, you know, that goes into being a great shooter.
I agree. And to add to that, I think a lot of being a great shooter has to do with the type of confidence that your teammates instill in you. You know what I mean? Like, if your team believes in you, then you're going to be a much better shooter. You know, if your teammates are passing you the ball when you need to get it, your coaches want you to shoot it. Talk about how, you know, the team environment can impact your confidence as a shooter.
Well, the team environment, you like you said, is pretty important. You know, if your teammates is telling you, like, you know, that's your shot right there. If you pass enough shots, if your teammates passing to you, like, you know, shoot every shot that you can see, you know. If you get that little bit of breathing room, it's, you know, it's very important. And I feel like if you're playing with a good point guard, you know, which we both did, is very vital that, you know, they talking to you before the game, you know, letting you know, like, hey, man, this is going to be your night. We're going to need you. You know, that can instill a lot of confidence in you as well.
Yeah, I think you alluded to Kay Felder right there. And yeah. We'll talk specifically on Kay Felder a little bit later in the show. But for now, let's switch gears just a tiny bit, but let's talk about your development as a shooter. So coming up, you know, prior to high school, into Pershing, Iowa State, and then into Oakland. Talk about when do you feel like you became very confident in your shot, and how did you develop that? Did someone teach you? Did you just learn it on your own? How did you develop that?
Yeah, growing up, you know, everybody always wanted to shoot the three. So, you know, when I was little, I used to always shoot the ball from my ear. And, you know, so in middle school, you know, I could get away with it. But, you know, going into high school, you know, I had to change some things up, you know, getting a ball, you know, closer to my chest, you know, releasing from there. So, you know, I had my high school coach by the name of A.W. Canada really work with me, my other high school coach, Coach Mel, Jamel Thomas, they really put a lot of hours in, you know, helping me, you know, change my form and, you know, get a lot of repetition with it and make sure I was confident with the changes. So, you know, I feel like my development been well, you know, I've been becoming more consistent, but, you know, it's a lot of work. And, you know, I feel like, you know, you would never reach that peak where you just, you know, the best. You always growing and getting better.
Yeah, always becoming. You can never be satisfied. But talk about, so we talked about just your shooting there. Talk about your development as an overall player. So describe the way, you know, you played as a younger player, and how does that compare to now, and how did that transition take place?
Growing up, I always been, you know, a shorter guard. So, you know, growing up, I was a point guard, you know, first of all. And, you know, I started getting my growth spurt, and, you know, I started doing different things. You know, I started being on the wing more and being able to score. So, you know, I feel like that all helps me in my game today, because, you know, it's hard to take a dude off the floor if he can dribble, pass, and shoot. You know, having all them elements, you know, it's hard for a coach to keep you off the floor. So I feel like I took pride in, you know, being able to do all those different things growing up, and which is helping me now today.
Right. And I think, I mean, I hope we'll get some Golden Grizzly fans, you know, tuning in. They see you playing point guard this season. Obviously, you didn't do that last season, but, you know, I guess that I didn't even know what you said, how you hit a growth spurt. So you were a true point guard early on. And then, you know, just the growth spurt allowed you to become like a wing. But, you know, you got that versatility. Yeah. Because you say that's because of your growth spurt, and because you were forced to play point guard early on, maybe.
Yeah, definitely, because I was smaller early on. I was forced to play PG, like you said, and hitting that growth spurt, I was able to move off the ball and, you know, develop some my wing skills and my scoring ability to get better, and then it allowed me to have a well-rounded game.
So how does it feel now playing point guard, though? Is that like something you know, you haven't done for a while, and or is it just natural?
It's something that, you know, it's still a transition for me, because you know, it's hard to change, you know, in college, you know, with not playing a position all through high school. You know, I played with Kay, so, you know, he had the ball in his hands a lot. You know, I had the ball in my hands a lot as well, but, you know, in college, it's a whole different game. You got to know the players from different positions, and, you know, it's something tough. And, you know, I feel like it's been a good challenge for me, and, you know, I'm really enjoying it, though.
Right. And, you know, a lot of fans, you know, who are familiar with Oakland will know that, you know, Oakland, it's not easy to run that offense. You know what I mean? There's a lot of different things, you know, a lot of different formations, and a lot of different, probably about five different formations with at least 8 to 10 different options off of them. You know what I mean? So, there's a whole bunch of different stuff we try to do in that offense. And being someone who's just, you know, thrown right into that role, after learning the plays from all a different, you know, standpoint before, you know, I'm sure it's been a challenge, but obviously, you know, you guys have hit a little bit of a speed bump here, but before that, you guys have been rolling, so I'm sure the Grizzlies will get it back on track.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm just going to talk a little bit about when you first came to Oakland. I think I knew you just a little bit through the Iowa State thing, just you know, being familiar with that team or whatever, but I didn't know you personally, and then you came to Oakland halfway through my junior year, and what none of the fans know is that you and Martez Walker made up probably one of the best scout teams ever. Absolutely dominating in scout team. And so let's talk about, number one, your recruiting process coming from Pershing, going to Iowa State. What made you choose Iowa State coming out of high school?
I feel like, you know, my recruiting process was, you know, it was pretty hectic, you know, starting from my sophomore year. Mm-hmm. I remember my first offer was from Central Michigan. Mm-hmm. And after that, you know, I started getting offers from everywhere, from Michigan, Indiana, Minnesota, Iowa State, Baylor, Florida State, a lot of schools was just coming in. And, you know, I was just looking at, you know, what schools was, what would be oh, excuse me, would be the right fit for me, you know, somewhere that I can go and be, you know, grow as a person, somewhere where somebody will, you know, they will value me more than just a basketball player. And I felt like, you know, Iowa State was that place for me, because, you know, I had Cornell Mann, who is on our coaching staff here at Oakland University. know, I knew him since like 10th grade when he was at Dayton. Then he went over to Iowa State, and I had a great relationship with him. You know, I think he came to all of my AAU games, and he was there front and center, and I feel like that played a big part. And then, you know, I wanted to go somewhere, you know, where Coach had some NBA ties, which was Fred Hoiberg, and you know, he was a down to earth guy, and you know, he would preach player development, and that was something that he did at Iowa State.
How involved was Oakland their first time around?
They was very involved, but you know, Saadi Washington, who was recruiting me, he kind of knew that, you know, I wasn't staying home. I made that clear to, you know, to the universities back home that I wanted to leave home. My mom was pushing me to experience a different type of basketball, experience a different state, and I had my mind made up on that.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I what sometimes people get caught up in is just like, sometimes you know you get excited when these big time schools come calling, and it happened to me. You know what I mean? I went to St. John's, mm-hmm. where I didn't get the, you know, get my fair share and get what I felt like I worked and deserved. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up coming back to Oakland, who was mm-hmm. there all along.
Right.
Do you have similar feelings like that? Or obviously, you know, we don't want to live with any regrets. You know, it is mm-hmm. what it is. But
right.
Just talk about in that perspective. You know, when these big time schools came calling, I'm sure that was, you know, flattering.
Yeah.
That was exciting for you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, growing up, you dream big. You know, you want to go to the big name schools that's on ESPN all the time. You know, you want your family to be proud of you. So I feel like that played a big part in my decision. I want to be on ESPN every other day, or ESPN2, and that's what Iowa State had. You know, they had that value in the recruiting process. You know, I feel like, you know, kids get caught up in, you know, them type of things, you know, which is, you know, it's important, but at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, that opportunity. And I feel like my opportunity at Oakland was, you know, way better than Iowa State, even though my experience was, I wouldn't say greater, but, you know, they were way more adventurous because we went to the NCAA tournament every year that we was there. And that's something that, you know, I want to help my team get to this year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, I guess, in our situations, you know, because obviously the dream is to go to Iowa State and be, you know, be an impact player and have a big role. And for me, go to St. John's and light up Madison Square Garden, you know what I mean? If you do that, then there's no need to, you know, search for an alternate. But when you're not getting, you know, when you're busting your ass, and you know, like, you and I know how hard both of us work, you know, when you're mm-hmm. busting your ass every day, putting it in day after day after day after day, doing well in practice, doing well on the scout team, and both of us even put in our redshirt year, you know what I mean, grinding mm-hmm. in that year, you know, when you just don't get the results, that's when a school like Oakland, you know, comes into play. And mm-hmm. for you, it was going back home, and for me, it was going to a school that recruited me from day one. And mm-hmm. when you get a school like that, it's a special thing because, you know, not a lot of people. You're from Michigan, so everyone knows about Oakland where you're from, but not a lot of people know on a national scale how special Oakland really is in terms of the opportunity it can provide people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely, you hit it right on the nail. Especially, you know, you talked about your transfer year, not your transfer year, but your redshirt year. Yeah, your redshirt year, you're working your butt off and you're not seeing no rewards or no, you know, you're not getting rewarded for the hard work that you're doing. It can be discouraging sometimes, you know. And during them hard times, you can find yourself and, you know, find out what type of player you are, you know, during them tough times.
Absolutely. So let's switch gears just a tiny bit. Let's talk about our Oakland team last year, 2015-16 team. For you, it was your first year playing at Oakland, and I think Campy always has this line, you know, it always takes the transfers, you know, at least half a season, if not a whole season, to really, you know, get their feet wet and get rolling, which was, I think, was true for me, because coming in, I was used to just being a standstill shooter, but at Oakland, you know, the shooter's asked to do a lot of different things, and you were asked to do a lot of different things last year because I'd say I would label you as our glue guy last year. Some games
definitely.
You were asked to score 15, 20 plus points. And some games, you know, you weren't too involved in the offense, and you were just focused on defense, guarding the best player. You had a lot of different hats you would wear. And so just talk about what your role was on the team last year and how you feel like what type of impact you were able to make.
Yeah, you definitely hit it on the nail. You know, I embraced that role of being a glue guy last year because I know we had, you know, a great shooter in you, a great playmaker, Kay Fielder, and we had some low post presence. You know, I feel like, you know, my role would be stopping the best player on the other teams. And that's something that, you know, I really took pride in because I know, you know, you got to make sacrifices, you know, to be a great team. And I feel like that was my sacrifice. And, you know, I was great with, you know, taking that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been, as you reflect, you know, you really think about, I think being on a team that understands the role of every player is I think that's a strong, you know, really important part of a team. So a team, for example, like our team last year, you know, I feel like you described them right there, but, you know, we had me as a 3-point shooter. That was my job. Kay Felder's job was to run the team. Percy Gibson and Jalen Hayes, you know, their job was to set screens and score on the block. You know, guys really knew their role, and I think that really led us, you know, to leading the nation in scoring at 86.4 points a game. And maybe it wasn't quite as, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, it wasn't quite as easy for you to necessarily understand what your role is because maybe some games you took a bunch of shots, maybe you didn't. But would you agree, you know, that defining roles just on any team is super important?
Oh, yeah, it's very important, you know, especially when you have transfers coming in. I was a transfer coming in with my first year. You know, you're expecting big things out yourself, not knowing that, you know, you got to learn the different ties and different, you know, different things of what the coach want because it's your first year. You sort of like a freshman in that offense and in that system. So, you know, it can be, you know, challenging in all aspects, you know. And then, you know, just having players just buy into the offense and buy into the team rules and just the overall, you know, culture of the team is very, very big for successful teams.
Yeah. And I think in college it's a little more difficult, but in high school I think you're able to define roles easier because, you know, if you're in a situation like you were at Pershing, you know, you've played with these guys your whole life. So you know exactly where Kay Felder's going to be. You know exactly where Martez Walker's going to be. So, like, coming to Oakland, you know, and a school like Oakland, you know, bringing talented players together, you know, you got to – it takes time. It's not going to happen, boom, overnight. You can't just say he's the shooter, he's the big man, and he's the point guard. You know, it takes time. And I think it took time for us to figure it out. But once we did last year, you know, we had a special offense. And then even now, then we're talking about roles this year. Your role is completely different. You know, you're playing point guard, something you haven't done, like you said, since high school. So let's talk about what you think it means to be a leader on this team. Talk about leadership and maybe what your leadership style is.
My leadership style is, you know, I have a lot of different kinds. On the court, you know, I'm very vocal. You know, I'm positive. I don't like the type of leaders that, you know, that get on people or, you know, try to make them feel bad. You know, that's not my way of leading. I feel like, you know, everybody got their own style. You know, I won't knock anybody for, you know, what they do. You know, whatever, you know, is good for that team is good for that team. But as a person, I just love to just have positive energy because, you know, players feed off that type of stuff, you know. And I feel like, you know, that's something that I bring to the table every day, you know, on and off the court, you know. I want to, you know, set a great example for the younger underclassmen, show them that, you know, in the classroom, you got to take advantage of your class work because at the end of the day, it's all about you. What you going to do when the ball stop bouncing? And I feel like, you know, being a leader is in all aspects of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like you said, leadership, you know, everyone has a different leadership style. Some guys are, you know, rah-rah in your face. Some guys are more quiet. Some guys are in between. I think leadership needs to be natural. You know what I mean? I hate when people just say, "Oh, he's the leader," or "He's the leader." I think leadership is something that needs to come naturally. Because if it's forced, then it's just awkward, and you know, it doesn't really get the message through, and people are just like, "All right, this guy's full of shit." You know, you want a leader to be genuine, and sometimes when someone's, you know, not genuine, you can see right through it. You can see, yeah, this guy's full of shit. Or another part that's bad about leadership is people don't practice what they preach. You know what I mean? If people say one thing, we got to work hard, we got to get in the gym, we got to take schoolwork seriously, we got to do all the right things to be able to perform. But then, you know, if they aren't carrying their, you know, at Oakland we like to call it, you know, the brick. If they aren't carrying their brick, you know, if they aren't pulling their weight, then I wouldn't respect them as a leader, as I don't think anyone would. But let's talk about leadership, you know, in a little different perspective. Talk about your relationship with Coach Campy and how you view him as a coach.
First of all, me and Coach Campy have a great relationship. You know, he does a great job with, you know, with having players come home and, you know, giving them a great opportunity at the school. You know, I feel like he's a great coach. You know, he comes in, he's energetic, he's passionate. You know, some people might call him crazy because of the things that he do on the sideline. But at the end of the day, he just wants his players to be so perfect that, you know, it's good for our team. You know, he always say he put most pressure on the players in practice so they won't mess up in the game. So I feel like, you know, he's a great coach all around. He's a great mentor. You know, he loves helping people out and giving, you know, people second chances. If you look, you know, at his rosters over the year, you know, some players might not have, you know, great pass, but you know, he put his trust in people and, you know, give them second chances and, you know, he helped people grow.
Absolutely. I think everyone who's transferred to the school has, you know, had a similar experience. And you know, pretty much all the transfers he's get taken have been ones from who have been similar to you and I, you know, coming from the bigger level schools. And I guess pretty much other than me, everyone's been from Michigan, but, it's like, you know, he identifies the players, you know, who are, their talent level is worthy, you know, for playing at the highest level in college basketball, but, you know, for whatever reason, it, you know, it just doesn't work out. And he welcomes those type of players with open arms. And I think it's becoming more and more of a trend with him. And now you, on the roster right now, there's you, Martez Walker, and then also you got Kendrick Nunn coming to play next year. So those are three guys who played at the high level schools. And you got, even if you want to go back, you know, Tommy McCune, me, Percy Gibson, Duke Mundy, you know, all these type of guys who played at the highest level. And like you said, Campy gives guys a second chance and pretty much throws them into the fire. You know what I mean? Says, let's see what you can do. I remember my first game, my junior year exhibition game. He played me 38 minutes. I was like, I'm used to playing 2 minutes and then getting subbed out. So it was a big time transition. Let's talk a little bit more about just the team chemistry. You know, that's necessary for a team to be successful, especially offensively, because team chemistry is so important. You know, you got to have that flow, that rhythm. And how big do you think is, you know, the off season? And like us, you know, we took the trip to Europe. How big was that in terms of contributing to our team, you know, meshing and everyone wanting to get along and grow closer?
Oh yeah, that plays a big part. You know, you and I both know, you know, off the court is way more, it's more important than on the court in some cases, because you got to gel, especially if you got new guys, you got freshmen, you got transfers, or you know, senior guys on the team. You're gonna have different perspectives from each group, so you know, it plays a big part that you got to get these guys gelling in the summer and getting guys knowing what each other love, you know, knowing about their background and just knowing what type of people they are. You know, it plays a big part, especially in chemistry. And and all the successful teams do a great job of, you know, not forcing it, but making it come natural to their team and making sure they have that brotherhood before they step foot on that court.
Yeah, definitely. And so you kind of talked about it a little bit, and we referred to it when we were talking about leadership. So how does it feel to be senior year? You know, you're a senior now, fifth year senior, and I imagine it feels like yesterday when you were in the shoes of a Braylon Neely or a Chris Palombizio and just learning the ropes, you know what I mean? Just starting off college basketball, just trying to figure it out. How does it feel to, like, is that almost weird? Like, damn, where did the time go type thing?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, college go by fast, life go by fast. And I just look back at Braylon and, you know, the freshman guys and say, man, wow. Like, like I was just packing my bags and going to Iowa State. But, you know, it's a beauty in all of it, you know, especially in the struggle. During the good and bad times, you got to find beauty in it. And I feel like during my college career, you know, you have different situations that's gonna present you in it. You find yourself growing up real fast, and you know, here I am. I'm a senior now, and you know, I just look back at it and just look at different situations. And I'm thankful that I went through certain situations because I'm the person I am.
Absolutely.
Now, because of those.
Yeah. I'm not trying to make it sentimental or anything, but I just think, you're grateful. You know, gratitude is definitely, when you reflect, I think gratitude is the best thing because, you know, it doesn't go according to plan. You know, if it went according to plan, I would have averaged 40 points as a freshman and been number one draft pick. You know what I mean? And so would have you. You know what I mean?
All right.
But then, you know, you just keep grinding, keep pushing, ultimately, you know, like you said, it ends up being, you know, a beautiful thing. Your journey, because no one can take your journey from you. It's uniquely your journey, and you're a kid from Detroit, Michigan, who was in Iowa. What the fuck are you doing in Iowa? Basketball can take you many places and offer you many experiences if you're open to it, and if you're willing to like try something new or just. To be like, oh well, this isn't how I usually do it. Well, maybe if you try something new, you'll get new results. But you've also, through your experience, had the chance to play with a handful of NBA players. Off the top of my head, I know K8 Felder and George Niang. Mm-hmm. I want to say Bryce Jones as well, and I don't know. Maybe if there's one more at Iowa State, but there quite a few talented players.
Chris Babb.
There you go, Chris Babb. Just talk about that and what it's like to flick on the TV and maybe see Kay Felder or George Niang, you know, playing for the Pacers or for the Cavs, or talk about that.
I mean, it's great. You know, you can see that, you know, these guys are getting rewarded for all the work they put in. Man, I've been playing with Kay since high school, and it's great to see that he's grown up, you know, and he's living out his dream. And same with George. You know, this dude came into college probably like 270 probably, and this dude probably like 220, 215 right now, and it's unbelievable the amount of work he put in. This dude would, like, we would have class in the morning. He would work out before class, get done with class, he'd work out, probably eat a little bit, go to practice, work out after that. Probably chill, work out after that, and this was all 7 days.
Right.
Even during conference play, he was working his butt off like that. And it's great to see guys rewarded, you know, for all the great work that they do.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I've had my own experience with George, and he's like you said, he came in as a, you know, a chubby guy. That was just the way his body was. You know, everyone has to mature at different rates, mm-hmm. and now he's eating salads and doing yoga, and he's been able to transform his body and hasn't quite seen the success on the court yet in the NBA, but you know, he's a rookie and it's part of it, but it's coming. And he's a unique player for sure, just as Kay is too, you know, because
Kay is because
to be able to score so much but also have so many assists and have so pretty much a handprint on almost every possession we have is like, I mean, tiring, first of all, And you know how it is. You play a lot of minutes this year as well. So, you know, those guys, it's great to see, you know, peers along your side, you know, have tremendous success at the next level. And, you know, as a leader now, I think you try to impart on the guys like who, you know, I referred to Braylon Neely and et cetera, et cetera. You know, you got to say, the type of work that Kay Felder put in, the type of work that George Niang put in, you know, that's the type of work you got to put in. If you even want to be a successful college player, but you know, if you want to have a chance to do something beyond that, you know, you got to just, it has to mean something every day, day in and day out. And so let's go to, talk about the relationship with, we could go any of the assistant coaches, but talk about, you mentioned Cornell Mann, initially, I believe a Michigan guy. Is that right?
Yes, he's from Detroit. Michigan.
Just talk about your relationship with him and what it's like to have him, you know, on the sidelines this year.
It was great, you know. I mean, he's a great mentor, he's a great coach. First of all, he's going to come in, you know, every day and, you know, get after you, challenge you mentally and physically. So, you know, that alone is, you know, is great, you know, from his part. And, you know, off the court, you know, he's like a father figure. He's a mentor, and he's going to help you, you know, excel in a classroom, on a basketball court, and just give you different pointers from his experiences to help you become the best player that you can be.
Gotcha. Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't have the chance to be coached by him, but I've heard quite a bit about him, and you have a, you know, a unique perspective with him, having been coached as a, you know, a guy who didn't play that much at Iowa State, but now as a guy who's one of the leading scorers, and you know, a huge factor on this team. I think that would be an interest. I couldn't even, you know, relate to that. I'm thinking of, you know, some coaches that I liked on the St. John's staff. It would be wild to have had them on my bench at a school where I'm really contributing. So let's go to, you know, once the ball does stop bouncing for Sherron Dorsey Walker one day, wherever that is, you know, I hope a long professional career, but whenever that is, do you see yourself getting into coaching, or do you have interest beyond that? What do you see for yourself?
I mean, that's a great question, man. You know, that senior year, you thinking all about the possibilities of, you know, when you're done planning. I feel like, you know, I got a lot of things that, you know, I am talented at, and I just got to sit down and just think about the things that, you know, I wouldn't want to do for the rest of my life. And I feel like coaching is one of the things that, you know, I feel like, you know, I have a passion for. I love basketball. I love being around, you know, players that want to win, that's willing to learn. And I feel like, you know, I keep my options open to coaching. And I feel like, you know, I just want to make an impact in this world, you know, somehow in a positive way, and just, you know, just be great, you know, when I'm done. I want to do something competitive. You know, you live in a competitive world, so, you know, I wouldn't have a hard time finding something competitive to do, you know. So with answering your question, man, I don't know right now. You know, I just got to sit down and really have some deep thoughts about it.
All right. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot.
No.
Who knows when that day will come, but, you know, yeah. I think, you know, all of us, we grow up whenever we started basketball. You know, basketball is what we do, and as whenever that day does come, you know, whether you're done playing after college, or whether you're someone, even for LeBron James, the ball stops bouncing, you know what I mean? Something he'll have to, you know, guys like that will have to make decisions. And, you know, coaching is something I've always been passionate about, but I feel like the leadership that you bring to a team now is almost like a preview for what coaching is like. And, as you've gained this experience and have the perspective you had having been a fifth year senior, you know, you almost start to think about the game as a coach, and are able to, you know, step out of yourself and just, why the fuck is this guy yelling at me like this? Well, maybe it's because he's not even mad at me. Maybe he's just setting an example for a young kid, or maybe he, you know, you just start to gain perspective that maybe you wouldn't have otherwise. And I think those experiences, you know, all help you become a better player and allow you to understand where the coaches are coming from. Because, you know, as we all know, the Oakland staff is you know, they get on you. They definitely get after you. They're not a, you know, they don't shy away from, they don't baby guys, and no one's safe.
yeah, for sure.
You know, they're not afraid to get on you and call you out no matter who you are. So I just think that's interesting, you know, to, while you're still in it and in the moment, you know, think of it from a coaching perspective that can in some ways elevate your game that much more. So let's talk about, you know, the rest of this Oakland season. You know, you guys are at a certain point in the season where, you know, you hit a few road bumps, but and now we, you know, as well, we, not we anymore for me, but you guys gotta right the ship. So what, you know, you don't have to give the dirty details, but just what does the Oakland team need to do the rest of the season to accomplish its ultimate goals?
Yeah, like you said, we just hit a couple road bumps. You know, we lost our last 3 out of 4, and you know, we had a point where we got to look in the mirror and see, and just, you know, evaluate ourselves first before we, you know, start blaming anyone else. You know, the players got to look at themselves in the mirror and just, you know, figure out what it is they can do to help this team get right back on track. You know, it's not going to be easy. You know, it's something that's, you know, is going to be challenging for our team, and I feel like, you know, it's something good for our team to hit these road bumps, you know, because, you know, we wouldn't want our team being complacent, you know. So we see that we can be beat, you know. We see that we're not higher than anybody. So I feel like it's good for our team. You know, we need to face some adversity, and I feel like it will help us once we get into postseason.
Absolutely. You know, coming from a conference like the Horizon League, We definitely learned the hard way last year, you know what I mean? It's a one bid league, and you could have the worst regular season, and if you win those, whatever it is, 3, 2, or 4 games, depending on how the seeds fall out, if you win those games when it matters, that's all that matters, and that's how you get remembered. So no pressure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, you know, it's just it's a different thing, you know, but we, both you and I dealt with it, you know, because at Iowa State, if you just collect wins along the way, then obviously you want to win every game you play and you want to win the conference tournament, but there's not as much back-to-the-wall pressure in terms of being able to make the NCAA tournament, because you don't need to win the conference tournament to make the tournament. And same with St. John's. You know, if you collect enough wins along the way, you'll make the tournament. But at Oakland, you know, it's do or die. So, yeah. Hoping that the Golden Grizzlies can, you know, stay focused on continuing to get better and moving forward, and keeping in mind that the season is not lost. And as a leader, you know, that's a huge thing for guys who haven't been through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. We just got to, you know, get back on track. You know, we're still in the race for the Horizon League regular season championship, and that's our first goal right now, is to, you know, reach that and, you know, fulfill that goal and go from there. You know, we got to take one game at a time. We got a stretch coming up where, you know, I don't think it's that tough for us. And I feel like we just need to take it one game at a time and, you know, just go out there and just play together and, you know, be confident.
Yep, absolutely. And I mentioned Cornell, man. Let's go to someone else on the staff. Talk about your, you know, maybe not a lot of fans wouldn't even know this guy, but talk about Alex Varland and your relationship with him. And, you know, he's for those fans who don't know, he's the Oakland University video coordinator. So a guy who I have a great relationship with, you know, always is available to watch film and cut up clips for whatever you want. And talk about him and talk about the value of film, you think, in your experience.
Oh, yeah. Alex Varland is great, you know, a.k.a. A.V.
Exactly, A.V.
The boy. But he's great, man. I mean, he's willing to help players develop. You know, he will come up to you with his laptop before practice. You know, like, hey, I got these couple clips that I need to show you. You know, he will. You know, he won't get on you. He would just show you, like, hey, you know, these are some things that, you know, you should be looking at or focusing on in practice that you can get better at, and it will help you, you know, apply these in the game. So I feel like he's a big part of our staff. You know, He's an important piece. I feel like we wouldn't be where we were, where we are today without him, because, you know, he bring in the good stuff that, you know, show players that, you know, hey, you need to step it up on this aspect of the game, and you need to contribute this part more, or you need to get better at this. So I feel like, you know, his value was very high on this team, and, you know, he's important piece to us.
Right. And not even just to talk specifically about Alex Varland, but because, you know, he's the one who makes these resources available to you, is just the value of film. And, you know, sometimes you can't know what the mistakes you're making. And another way that I like to use film is, frankly, I just, you know, with YouTube these days, you got access to all these great players in the world. So I, you know, I might model my game after someone like Kyle Korver or J.J. Redick, and I'll just go on there and, you know, when you and I were first growing up, you know, you didn't have the access to those sorts of things. But nowadays, there's all these clips, you know, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. You know, kids these days could have access to pretty much anything they want at the touch of their, you know, at their fingertips. So I just go watch a little 5-minute Kyle Korver reel and just see, how does he get open, and how can I apply that to my game? Do you see any of that? You know, do you see any players that you might look to little aspects of their game to model after or something?
Growing up, I just look at all the, you know, the guards and that's great scores, you know.
Right.
I always want to you know, pattern my footwork after Kobe. You know, he had great footwork, and I feel like, you know, that's something that, you know, I developed over my years. Scoring ability, I always want to score like KD.
Yep.
Because, you know, that dude can just fill it up. So, you know, I just look at different players. You want to take some of their moves, you know, some of their crossovers they may use, or, you know, different things that they use, and that's making them successful. So I don't focus in on just one player, but I look at a lot of different players.
Right. Or even when you're just casually watching a game, you know, maybe, oh shit, how can I apply that to my own personal game? What about, to go back to Alex Varland, you know, sometimes in film sessions with a whole team film session, you know, a lot is lost just because it has to be pretty general. You know, you can't necessarily nitpick every single little detail. But talk about the way, you know, Alex Varland will give you 5 clips specifically just of you, and he'll be like, if you just moved over 3 extra feet on this defensive possession, you'd have a steal. Or if you did just tiny little things, you know, sometimes all the difference can be in the details. What do you think about that?
It's very great. And, you know, the basketball is all about angles and, you know, different things that, you know, it's all about positioning. So, you know, with my transition at a point guard this year, you know, playing that role during the game, you know, AV was, you know, a pretty big part of my development, because he would come in and show me, you know, different passes that I will make that will make it hard for the shooters to, you know, catch and shoot, you know, mm-hmm. you know, on money, and, you know, them just, you know, having that split second off my passes would be great for them and help them with their percentages, you know. So coming in, I was, you know, throwing a ball, but, you know, I wasn't throwing it to the shooting pocket, so I had to, you know, do some drills and practice, you know, with our grad assistant, and, you know, focus on getting a pass on the money so that the shooter didn't have to take time, you know, fumbling the ball off bad passes. So I feel like he would just come in and just show me some clips like that, you know, that would make a big difference, but it's so little.
Right. Now that's big time stuff. And I can relate to exactly to that, because, you know, for me, I had a different role and different things, but it would just be just split second, tiny little things. How can I get my shot off? How can I get open? What do I need to do that? And that dude was huge. So I just had to, you know, bring him up on here and, you know, give him a nice little shout out, because Oakland Golden Grizzly fans might not necessarily understand his impact on the program. And that's the point of this podcast, is to give, you know, different perspectives and things that you couldn't just read online or couldn't just, gather from watching the game. There's so much more that goes into it as a, you know, as a casual fan might not see. So, Those are all the questions I've got for you. The way this is Shooting the Breeze. That's the name of the podcast, obviously, because you know me, I'm a shooter.
And shooter.
For those who don't know, my entire senior year, I shot only three-pointers, only three-point shots, not one two-pointer. 257 threes, to be exact. And so we're going to stick with the theme of all threes. So we're going to wrap this up with our top three. And on this episode, I have chosen the category to be top three most underrated shooting guards between my top three and Sharon's top three. So I'll start it off, and then we'll go one and one back and forth and just list off our top three most underrated shooting guards. Just want to, you know, just let the listeners have some different top threes out there and just mix it up. So for my number one top three, my number one most underrated shooting guard, not necessarily in order, just one of them, and there's tons out there, but I chose a guy who Michigan you know, residents are familiar with, Joe Dumars.
Man, I'll say the same
thing. Oh, man. Joe Dumars, he is, for his career, averaged 16 points per game, shot 38% from three. His best season, he averaged almost 24 points a game, and shot 46 from the field, 37 from the three, 86 from the line. I mean, this dude is, you know, probably didn't get the, you know, maybe the recognition he deserved due to Isaiah Thomas being such a great player. And he's a little bit before my lifetime, so I don't necessarily know, you know, what it was like at that time. But based on watching film, this dude was nasty. I mean, this dude was nasty. And, you know, as a Michigan guy, you might have even more perspective on it. But that dude is definitely does not get the respect he deserves in terms of how his playing career turned out.
Yeah, definitely. And you hit it on the nail with all the numbers, man.
Yeah,
I love the numbers, but you know, I'm more the production guy and seeing seeing how dudes play, man. That dude had heart, man.
Yep.
And
yep.
He came in to work, you know, every day he was there. You know, I saw the clips. You know, you and I both wasn't born, but you know, I hear stories about Joe Dumars all the time.
Right.
You know, I had the pleasure of meeting him. You know, he have a
facility or something like
you
that.
You have a facility down in Detroit, you know, that's where all the AU games be at. But, you know, back to the topic, he did what a lot of guys couldn't do, and that was guard Michael Jordan. and that's something that, you know, that's really big and something that nobody else can do. And he was a knockdown shooter and an all-around scorer as well.
Right. I think I don't know why he's underrated, but maybe, you know, just – any shooting guard who played in Michael Jordan's era naturally gets underrated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go to my number two because we had the same number one, I guess. My number two is Mitch Richmond. This dude, you know, had a tremendous career. His best year, he averaged 21 points, shot 37 from the three. I mean, this dude was a legend for the Sacramento Kings and for the Golden State Warriors. And this guy, another guy, you know, before our time in basketball, but, you know, I try to
got to keep up with everybody.
I try to do my research as best I can. And like I was saying, you know, all this stuff is available on YouTube these days. So sometimes when I'm bored, I might just go online, type in one thing, and 2 hours later end up on, I don't even know, some random player's clips from from years ago. But I mean, Mitch Richmond, he's a big time scorer. Now works at St. John, so he's my number two. Who you got for number two?
Number two, I got another Detroit guy, man. Richard Hamilton.
There you go.
That dude is so underrated, but he's like great, that. Man. He's an NBA champion.
Yep.
He won in college. You know, he was an All American, 2-time Big East leading scorer. And that dude can shoot the ball, man.
Yep.
I never saw nobody run more than Reggie Miller and Richard Hamilton until I met Max Hooper. Like, in open gym, bro, I had to chase you everywhere. You was knocking down threes from everywhere. And you reminded me of them two dudes because you never stop moving, man. And it's vital to a team because, you know, with them three-point shooters getting all that attention of them running around, it gives the big man, you know, open coverages and giving them, you know, It's like an assist, man. I wish they could start assisting those. But you know, my number two is Richard Hamilton for sure.
Big time. I mean, I got to speak on Richard Hamilton because he what the difference between how I pattern my game and Richard Hamilton is he loves to curl those floppy screens when he comes off the single double. He loves to curl in. He loves the elbow jumper, and you know, obviously, I like to extend it to the three. But he just. I think he became a 3-point shooter at the end, but that dude, man, I don't know if I ever saw him miss a mid-range jumper ever.
No,
he
didn't.
And he had that laser vision with the mask on. You know what I mean?
Oh, he
developed his own persona, and that I think that 04 Detroit Piston team really defined roles really well. Like I talked about earlier, you know, Chauncey Billups handling the ball, Richard running around, Tayshaun Prince locking up, and then the bigs, you know, just. The Wallaces just screening and rebounding and all that, you know, it was fun basketball to watch and you being a Michigan guy, that was fun. Number three
definitely.
For me is gonna be. I mean, everyone knows this guy and he's very well known, but he just is, you know. I think it's similar to Joe Dumars in the sense that he played at the same time as Kobe. You know what I mean? It's Manu Ginobili. And,
Man.
Yeah. So he's got a, you know, still playing, still kicking at whatever he is, 38 years old. But multiple championships. I think multiple six man of the year, or at least one, and just has played so many different roles. Because sometimes he plays like a point guard. Sometimes he just goes and gets buckets. I got to give him credit for being the one who brought the Euro step to the NBA, and as a result, you know, to basketball in America, you know.
Yeah.
You see kids, they don't even know what the hell they're doing, but they're doing Euro steps. They don't even know why they're doing it, but they're doing Euro steps. But he really, you know, was so crafty with the footwork and the lefty, you know, all the lefty finishes. So that's my number three.
Yeah, man, you hit it right on the nail with that one, man. He's definitely underrated. And it's funny, man, most of all the people that play for the Spurs are underrated just because of their demeanor. They're not flashy. They're not, you know, they're not there for the spotlight. They just come in and get their work done. You can name, you know, Tim Duncan. He changed the game. How many guys was using the backboard as a shot?
None.
Nobody. Tony Parker. Not many guys was spinning in traffic and doing crazy finishes until they saw him doing it. And you hit it on the nail with, you know, Manu Ginobili with his Euro step and all the great things he brought to the game. For my third one, man. This is my guy, man. I love this dude growing up, man. And I was you know, mad to see him lead a game, man. It's Brandon Roy.
Dude was
crazy, man. Like the things he did was unbelievable, man. I love that dude game, and I was, you know, it was sad to see him go with all the, you know, injuries that he had.
Right. That's a really good one. But he's one of the guys who always kind of gets forgotten just because. His story wasn't able to be fully told, and you know he came up around the time, you know, when Kobe and T-Mac were at a peak, and I'd say at his best year he was right there. You know, he was and he was right on that level. And even Dwayne Wade, you know, who knows where Brandon Roy's career could have been if he would have been able to stay healthy. Just I think his knees just didn't hold up, but. Those are two pretty good lists. I liked your list a lot, and
likewise.
So on that note, we're gonna wrap it up. But I appreciate you joining me, talking some hoops, and you know, giving your perspective. So until next time, we wish you all the best the rest of the season. We'll talk soon, Sharon.
All right, thanks, bro. My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Later.
Yep.